Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and I had some thoughts reporting to do from the OTA today on May 19th, 2026. A very hot day today. Unpadded practice, I think, fortunately for the players, but 95 degrees for a high today in Baltimore. A non-mandatory off-season training activity or OTA. The players not present included Chidobe Awuzie, Rashad Bateman, Lamar Jackson, Kyle Hamilton, although he was there on the sidelines. Teddy Buchanan, Marlon Humphrey, Adisa Isaac, Nnamdi Matabike, Calais Campbell, John Jenkins, and Travis Jones. So a lot of veteran players, the major first contract people who are not there, Teddy Buchanan and Adisa Isaac, were cases where there might have been some sort of injury involved. So Buchanan's still recovering from his injury at the end of last year. Adisa Isaac, I'm not sure the reason, but I imagine it was injury related because this is a big opportunity for him. All right, so I'll report on a few of the drills they had there. They had some of the set and snap drills we saw last year. These are helmetless. They go to the line of scrimmage. They try and get there quickly. They try and make sure players know the play. They get out quickly. And it seems to be less of an effort this year of duplicating the huddle, which they did some with Monken last year, but they don't wear helmets. Roquan Smith was there. He was wearing a helmet. And Tyler Huntley was wearing a helmet, but nobody else was. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There weren't any false starts that I saw. There was an official out on the field at that point, I guess, who could have called them. So I don't think there were any false starts as they went. And that's always good to get through that drill without a problem there. And they're running two sets of these. So they ran them, you know, for kind of a first and second team on opposite ends of the field. So nice to see them get off. There's the ball might have changed hands to a running back. There were no throws. There were no thrown passes within this drill. So it's really just a get-off drill, like I call it, a set-and-snap drill. I was looking around at some of the position drills, and I saw one that I hadn't seen before, and I just have to talk about it a little bit. The defensive lineman had this tennis ball drill. Now, normally when I think tennis ball drill, I think ball is thrown up. Defensive backs have to track the ball and try and display their good hands to kind of catch it, which is very different from catching a football. And we've seen that done by Harbaugh in the past. This was some sort of maybe a divided attention drill. Maybe there's something the defensive lineman needed to do at the same time. He was chasing down this ball, or maybe it was a case of trying to get the defensive lineman to bend over in a certain way. I couldn't really tell exactly what was going on, but it was entertaining to watch this happen. And there's clearly there was some strategy to it or whatever, that the players were not just picking up the ball as soon as they had a chance to grab it. There's something else they had to accomplish, but I hadn't seen it before. If anybody has any idea what the other portion of that I'm missing is, I'd love to hear it, because I couldn't figure it out watching it for four or five reps. A lot of special teams drills and some interesting things. Now, this time of year, they're building up to full team reps, full 11-on-11 reps still, by looking at dissected pieces of either kickoffs or punts. So we saw a number of those today on both sides. So we saw separately, kickoff coverage and gunner practice were separate. So gunner practice, as you can imagine, is some blocking and is having to beat some opponents who are trying to block and figure out how to release against them. Kickoff coverage was a bunch of different things. And they had some half side five man kickoff coverage situations where they needed to maintain containment. Basically, they wanted him to get down there, get to the player as quick as possible, force that containment, force the player in one direction or the other, which was, I think, what was they were trying to get out of the drill. They had a number of punt block and coverage drills with the interior five. Those are cases where you block and then you release and go, and in fact, you're forced to hold your release until the ball is kicked. And they also had an interesting containment drill, which is kind of in the form of flag football. And I guess this could really apply to either a punt or kickoff, but it kind of looked like this was kickoff related. So the defenders had to hold their relative inside, or their respective, I should say, inside and outside leverage versus the opponent. And the players had various degrees, frankly, of commitment to pulling a flag, but it was in a flag football format where the ball carrier did have flags on. The guy who really showed up in this drill was LaJonte Wester. He forced some misses from the opponent. It's good to see him kind of jitterbugging around the field a little bit more. And he looked very impressive dodging between players, trying to, you know, getting them to miss the flags. Bunch of receiving drills I watched. One of them that was interesting, and this is something the Ravens don't often do a lot of, pick and rub training, I would say. You know, I was once told by Harbaugh, they run it all the time. And, you know, I have not seen it run very often in camp. It's just the way I'll say it. This wasn't exactly the same, but they kind of ran a two-man crossing drill, and it was a 2-on-0, so meaning there's no defenders. It's just two offensive players trying to set up how to release on their routes, one coming from inside and one heading more directly upfield. What that does is that forces a defensive switch. It doesn't do a lot of good to run these drills directly against defenders when they know it's coming. You need to run these as part of 11-on-11 reps or maybe 7-on-7 reps when they don't know what's coming, and then they have to make this switch and see if you could, they can stay with their coverage. So as a 2-on-0, they're just learning the technique, frankly, on the offensive side. What else we have? I watched them run 5 simultaneous routes, and they have 4 quarterbacks in camp. They also have a coach who will throw the ball. By the way, accuracy was at a premium on this day from quarterbacks. The quarterbacks were not particularly accurate at all. Unfortunately, it's May. But, you know, on the plus side, some of the receivers, and in particular, Jacoby Lane, had a good ability to show out in terms of his ability to reach back and get the football and, you know, just catch balls outside the frame. He did a very good job of that today. He was the receiver, I'd say, who stood out most in that category. But these 5-on-0 routes they run are, I believe, an actual play called, and they're all timing routes to get the ball to the receiver at a specific point in time. So it looks like basically all the balls are thrown at the same time. It looks like you get a good idea of sensing of the spacing on each of these plays. So it's kind of neat to say that. Nothing I can say, obviously, about what in particular spacing I see, but there are a you see a lot of the most fundamental concept in passing football is that you don't clump up your receivers in one area of the football field. So you do you see, you know, players who are you know, each presenting themselves to receive a football at a different spot on the field. Yeah, again, Jacoby Lane made a nice grab during that drill, extending forward away from his frame to make a catch. So a lot of inaccurate throws there. I assume some of that was the coaches and not just the quarterbacks missing as badly as a few of these throws went. In terms of the one other really big special teams look today, we saw Tyler Loop made 6 consecutive field goals. As I recorded them, the distances were 25, 33, 38, 43, 48, and 63 yards. By the way, that 63-yarder right down the middle with plenty to spare. Loop, and maybe this is a Randy Brown teaching thing, seemed to have a system where they alternate their kicks from the left and right hash. In addition to making him 5 yards further back on the typical kick, they alternate from left to right hash. So you don't get used to one particular kick, one particular spot. It's you might kick it from either it works out. But anyway, Loop, one of the offensive stars of the day, certainly the special team star of the day. Sorry, LaJonte Wester, but I think it would be Loop with that 63-yard field goal. A little bit of a scary moment. Derrick Henry had knee-to-knee contact with another player. I'm not sure who that was, by the way, but Henry was the one who went down for a period of time. There were several players that were seemingly concerned about it and kneeling. And Henry got up after a couple of minutes, and not even that long, and returned quickly to practice. So that ended some of the fear there. The fact that he returned to practice is probably a good indication everything is all right. Even more an indication that everything's all right is he went to the podium afterwards. So if he's going to be put in a position where he might have to answer questions about that, it certainly is going to be a situation where he's all right. So thank goodness. Minter said basically the same thing. Thank goodness, that is. Saw an interesting drill from the defensive backs, and they were attacking and then shedding a one-man sled. So one-man sled, there's not too much to it, but you can imagine what it looks like. It's kind of an elongated thing you have to drive against. I guess you could lift it up off the ground. They did a little bit of that. And then the other thing they did is throw the thing away to one side. So the standout in that drill, at least initially, was TJ Tampa, who really lifted the sled up a good distance and then threw it off to the side, violently, and then went and made his play after that. Malachi Starks and Counter Jackson also did very well with the drill, throwing the sled aside violently. There were some guys in the middle. I'd say Rivers was pretty much in the middle in this. And there's some other guys who didn't really seem to do much with the sled. And it was a little, it's almost like there might have been a little less want to in there. But in any case, I don't think they really impressed the coaches with their ability to move the sled. 7-on-7 highlights. You have a few of those. And 7-on-7s, you don't always get all the 7-on-7s at one point during practice. And that's the same for the 11s, of course. And so I grouped them by drill type rather than, them being strictly chronologically within the practice here. But we had TJ Tampa show up again. He broke up an extended play from Huntley to Lane. Now, extended plays are kind of frowned upon in 7-on-7, and the whistle sometimes gets blown for a sack if the quarterback takes too long. Because there's no pass rush obviously involved, but Huntley kind of just took his time and then he motioned to a receiver for him to, get back. It was Lane, threw a ball very deep down the middle lane, about 50 yards, but TJ Tampa was in position to make a play on the football and prevent the completion. So good play by TJ on that. Lucas Scott had a drop near the line of scrimmage. The one thing you look at Lucas Scott this year, he's a 290-pound former offensive tackle from Navy. At least 290 is what he listed at last year, and even this year on the Ravens roster. Ain't no way Lucas Scott weighs 290 pounds. He looks more like a tight end. He probably weighs 255 to 270 in that range, maybe, maybe less than that, but he's well under 290. It looks like Scott might be trying to turn himself into a blocking tight end, a guy who can play in line very comfortably, possibly even a sixth offensive lineman he could be. But, the Ravens don't really have a fullback spot for him anymore. So for him to make the team, it's going to have to be as a blocking tight end or possibly even as the practice squad. He'll need to be kind of the top available blocking tight end option. And then if they lose one of their two guys, either Smythe or Cuevas, then they could turn to Scott and bring him up for a few games if needed. Marquise Robinson. A guy I've been very positive on since last camp. I thought he played extremely well in last camp and preseason. He deflected a pass intended for Wester by the right sideline. Nice play there, and he was very excited after it. Xavier Guillory was lost in coverage. This is on a 7-on-7 play. It's really bad, by the way, when this happens. 5 yards by the left sideline and raced down that sideline for a 70-yard touchdown as the defenders tried unsuccessfully to catch up. So Guillory, nice show off of the speed and made it down that sideline without being caught. Cornelius Johnson, another one of the receivers kind of fighting for a spot on the back end, where's number 86. He showed some speed racing past defenders on a crossing route. Johnson is a guy who probably, let me just see how old Cornelius Johnson is right now. So we're 86. He's 25 years old, 6'3", 212. So a bigger guy, played at Michigan, and he's a first-year player, which means he was on somebody else's practice squad or was at camp at least last year. But he's now in at least in year two. He's a year one player who does not have the rookie designation. So he's in at least year two. It could be year three, in fact, if he spent 2 years on a practice squad. But anyway, nice crossing route by him, and he sped past a number of defenders who didn't seem really able or ready to deal with him. Let's put it that way. Move on to 11-on-11. I think one of the big kind of things about this practice, you have to kind of take everything you see from running backs with a grain of salt, because typically you can't tell much from a running back. But one thing you really do want to see is when the offensive line gives them a hole that they overcompeted to get, the running back better exploit it and really burst through it and show that. We saw a lot of that from the running backs. Randall looked really good. One of the younger guys who's on the fringe of the roster here, and that's Elijah Tau Tolliver. He also looked pretty good. He's from Michigan State. Tau Tolliver is a rookie also, so he's a true rookie in terms of that. I don't even know when they signed him. I don't remember him being a initial UDFA guy, so maybe they signed him off a tryout or some such. But anyway, he had a really good run today that looked terrific. And I think that whatever Ioane and the center, and I would say primarily the right side of the offensive line was creating, the running backs did a very good job of exploiting it. And I when I did my from the scene kind of short video, I think the offensive line and running backs combo was one of the standout units of the day that they really put it together. We saw Ethan Burke, the defensive end, have consecutive outstanding plays. He had a false start. I don't know who had the false start opposite him. I don't know if it was Stanley. Might have been Lichtenhahn. Might have been Vinson. There are multiple people it could have been, but he was at right defensive end, and it was the left tackle on the play. Immediately, he followed that up with a pass that he tipped. It was headed to the left sideline. So really good job by Ethan Burke, and he was one of the defensive standouts of the day. But a false start by Rosengarten. I think it was by Rosengarten. And again, this is one of the places where in past years, they would have made these guys run laps, and that would have been something. Like, oh, well. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. I guess that was Rosengarten, you know, but we don't know in this particular case. Got a sense of Vega's size and the kind of momentum he can absorb as a human being. Trenton Simpson ran into him pretty much at full speed, it seemed like. And Ioane literally lifted him up like he was a blocking sled, except maybe a plastic blocking sled, and just stonewalled him. The relative size of the two players, and Simpson is extremely ripped. I mean, he's a big linebacker. Now it didn't used to be the case, but I mean, he put on all this really good weight, and he's now a very muscular player. Certainly was last year as well. And he got stood right up by Ioane. So it was good to see that the first round draft pick is looking real good. Dayton Wade leapt acrobatically to try and make a catch. He was unable to haul it in. It was 10 yards between the hashes, but he almost did it, including some effort on the ground to try and collect the football. I'd like to see it. Wade is a guy, obviously, that right now seems to be on the outside looking in. I just recorded the expectations pod on Wade and Wiggins. Wade's situation, you know, with this now being his he's technically a second year player, but he's yet to play his first NFL snap. It's a tough spot he's in, and there's not a lot of hope that he makes the team, but it still could be a practice guy for the Ravens, that if anything were to happen to LaJonte Wester, that he would be the guy who would take over punt duties. And, you know, we think back to 2024, one of the problems with Wade's career to date is he didn't take those over, and they used four different guys, including Deontay Hardy and Deontay Johnson. Oh my God, what a mistake that was. And Sims, and there's one other, Anthony Miller, also returned some kicks and was in there as a receiver. And Wade never got a chance in 24, and he had a big preseason that year. So it's unfortunate. We don't know what's going on in the practices. It could be during the year he's fumbling the football and they didn't really trust him on special teams to catch punts. But it certainly seems bad that he wasn't part of that opportunity to in 24. Skylar Thompson, this was his first practice that I'd seen him play. He was, you know, he's there yesterday when Ryan Mink apparently was the only one with a pad outside. The regular media was not invited to that. He threw a ball well behind Jacoby Lane, which was incomplete, and Lane made a really good effort on the ball. Thompson obviously appreciated that, gave Lane a fist bump, but obviously was apologizing for the pass being off target. But that was a common problem today, as I mentioned, a lot of balls way off target. Rasheen Ali also, I mentioned other guys with bursts, but he had a burst through a big hole and was not caught on an apparent TD run. Sometimes I don't really know if the defenders are not trying to get in front of these guys that have a full head of steam, but they're just nobody was really close to Ali on this play. It was very, probably well-blocked play, but there was a big hole at the line of scrimmage anyway, and Ali exploited it well. Hendrickson was caught offside one time, not a big deal, obviously, and Trey Hendrickson does do that sometimes. Jacoby Lane again showed off his catch radius with a spinning grab of a ball behind him. It was about 15 yards between the numbers and the right hash, and I think that might have been from Huntley, but I'm not 100% sure. Rasheen Ali had a nice yak burst after a short catch as well, so we saw Ali make contributions as a runner and a receiver in this one. Defensive player of the day, Robert Longerbeam, stepped in front of a pass from Tyler Huntley for the day's only interception. It was about 10 yards between the numbers and the left hash. And a lot of things good about that. But Robert Longerbeam is one of a number of young cornerbacks that the Ravens have to sift through to find out who their valuable potential cornerbacks are. And Longerbeam is certainly one, but Balakone, and they have Rivers, who they just drafted, who I'm sure will make the team, but in terms of where he fits on the totem pole, there's a question. They have Marquise Robinson, who made a nice play today, was on the practice squad last year. So they have a few guys to go through that they have to figure out which cornerbacks can really help us. And they may have some difficulty figuring out who their top six are. And that is a position, normally this doesn't happen too much, but that is a position I think it might go all the way to the preseason to see who can perform under some live fire reps to try and make some choices. Xavier Gilroy had a very nice diving grab, 15 yards between the hashes, also from Thompson. Another ball way outside the frame, but Gilroy did a good job of going to get it. Practice ended with a very interesting event, a medicine ball toss where offense and defense each had a participant. And we kind of actually moving over to the area where it was, just getting ready to start our video and whatnot. But I'm told Elijah Surratt beat somebody, and I don't know who he beat. I assume it was a defensive back. Probably because they were kind of going by weight class, I think, as they moved up through the ranks here. Then we had Josh Cuevas, the tight end, beat Kamen Rucker and threw a medicine ball further. And it's just kind of like almost shot putting a medicine ball, but it's like a two-handed chest shot put, if you want to call it that. And he won that. And then the main event was Venga Iwane versus Zion Young. And Young looked like he is very ripped and is ready to go here. But Ioane beat him with a very significant toss. Absolutely the offense going wild for this. So this is a good thing added by Minter to add some flavor on a hot day. After each of these losses, the defense had to do push-ups. It's kind of a injury added to insult kind of thing, or insult adding to injury, whichever the direction this went. But the offense certainly chatting it up after winning there. Moved over to the podium. We had three guys at the podium day. So Minter was there. He talked about about practice in general. It's not a padded practice. This is not a high contact practice. He said the offensive line and defensive line in particular, they need to help each other out. So they need to give each other a good look and try and compete against each other, or try and get make a good move kind of thing, but don't try and win the rep specifically. There's some players I'm not sure they can really do that. I'm just not convinced that they can do it. So Defensive line in particular was missing a lot of players. So they had Travis Jones, John Jenkins, Nnamdi Madikike, and Calais Campbell. Basically all the guys who are a sure thing to make the roster on the defensive line, four of the five total spots, those guys weren't even there. So you're talking about a relatively limited set of players there who then have to go up against an offensive line that's been rebuilt and did pretty well, frankly, today. Let's see, what else from Minter? Said Lamar Jackson will be here soon. I'm using air quotes, but said he would keep that between the exact date as to when he would arrive between him and Lamar. Said Lamar had been one of the leaders in the offseason preparation or whatnot. So that's good to hear at least. And hopefully the relationship between the team, you know, the progress towards getting him signed is still moving along. So I certainly hope that's the case. He was asked a question about Hibner, who, you know, tight end drafted in the fourth round. The Ravens traded up to get him. And the difference he saw in him between his time at Michigan when Minter was there and his time at SMU. And he said, yeah, at Michigan, he's behind a couple other great tight ends, including Colston Loveland. And he didn't really have a chance to be a receiving tight end there. And I think he only had two targets or something during his entire time at Michigan. Then he moves to SMU, where he's kind of a central target and a flex tight end, as opposed to a guy who would line up in line. And that's something Minter mentioned, is that he would line up in line more at Michigan. And so big difference between the two, but obviously a player that they liked. And I think it's likely that Minter liked him and said some positive things about him, and said, hey, look at him as a receiver now, but he was, and he always had good speed, but he was a good blocker back when I knew him in the day. Minter was asked about the center competition. And I think the question was just from the Danny Pinter, how's he doing kind of thing. But he mentioned three guys. He mentioned Pinter, Gwynn, and Bullock. He actually uses their first names in those cases. And I couldn't hear initially what he said, but it's Jovan and Corey. And he said that that's a position where we may see regular changes through camp, and didn't want to commit, obviously, to any one of them. But I do think it's probably significant that he's kind of named those three. That sounds like a lot of the competition, where the competition is for center this summer if they don't go outside the organization to get somebody. Joint practices were recently announced. He said that they were a great opportunity for team bonding, particularly on the road. And the Ravens have done a fair amount of that. If you remember, Harbaugh always takes them for some trip to like a historic landmark or to something. They've done some Civil War things, and they've done some other things as well that have just been more fun activities where they would do things together. And it's all of those things are good. I think that anytime they can bond in a way is positive. And sometimes it's going to be offense versus defense, like it was in the Medicine Ball Challenge today. And sometimes it's going to be something else. Derrick Henry was next at the podium. Extremely soft-spoken dude. So just the opposite of himself as a runner. But he clearly didn't want to upset anybody. You know, he's asked some specific questions about differences in scheme and this and that. And he just comes back to, you know, it's just football. Just have to work hard. Just have to learn the terminology as it's used. Just have to, you know, and it's very much back to first principles with pretty much every answer he gave at the podium. I don't fault him for that at all, but it's just, you're not going to get a lot asking Derrick Henry to compare and contrast Harbaugh and Minter, for example. He's not willing to do that. He won't fall into that trap. He did answer one question. So he was asked a little bit about helping Adam Randall because they were similarly caught and they had some similarities as backs. And, you know, he seems to like who Randall is and said so. But, you know, one thing he said is he wants to be a leader by example rather than a vocal leader. So sure, he's there to help Randall anytime he wants it, but he's not going to go there and get in his business, is what I took from his talk there. So Adam Randall may or may not be the guy who will seek out Derrick Henry about specific elements. He did praise Eddie Faulkner, by the way. Didn't get a chance to ask the question I really wanted to, which was, you know, how is Eddie Faulkner instilling the ability to miss tackles in the Ravens running backs. And obviously a lot of that will come in camp, and I'll hopefully have another chance to ask that of either him or Faulkner or one of the running backs, or even Minter. But Faulkner definitely comes with that reputation from Pittsburgh. And I think the team they've assembled could be extremely complementary in terms of how they like to run a run offense, and how their running backs can force missed tackles. So I'm very excited to see how that plays out. Last guy at the podium was John Simpson. Now, this is interesting because this may have been his first time at the podium as a Raven. It definitely was his first in his second tour where he is now. So he talked about Venga, and he said that he's observant, soaks everything in, seems to be very intelligent. So a positive on that. John Simpson himself seems to be quite intelligent at the podium, well-spoken. We didn't get into self-effacing things. Nobody asked a question about penalties or whatever with him up there. But, you know, he had a lot of very good points to make that were on target. He said that Ledford is a great teacher, that he really slows things down when things are needed. He was asked about, you know, differences in the culture. He said he didn't really see a big change in the culture. You know, this is the Ravens. The organization was what it was the first time he was here, as far as he knows. He didn't really notice a difference in culture. You're expected to win. You're expected to work hard. First of all, that's the right answer, period. But, to the degree that coaches are attempting to instill some particular culture, maybe the best example I can give is Minter talking about be the best when the best is demanded of you. You know, it's a stretch to make the medicine ball challenge that, but then kind of part of why that's true, at least in his mind, is that, you know, you don't know what's coming and you still need to be at your best kind of thing. So I thought, you know, it's reasonable, and you know, the veterans are probably going to always be a little bit slower to buy into this, but the players really enjoy it, whether veteran or not. They really seem to enjoy the practice of competing against each other, which is, I think, always, you know, a good thing. John Simpson also praised Danny Pinter for his line calls. So one of the interesting things, and by the way, it doesn't have to be the center who would be making line calls, I guess, on this unit with Simpson, a bunch of different centers, and Venga, it's more likely that it would be the center that would make line calls. And it's also more likely that Ledford and Minter would want to see how the centers can make line calls, given that one of them, you know, is likely to have the job, and whether or not they could get Kevin Zeitler tomorrow, and Kevin Zeitler then probably would be making the line calls in terms of, hey, you know, 52's the mic or whatever. You'd be using a different player to make those calls, but really nice during camp to see what everybody's got and get a chance to look at different people and how they can project that information out to their teammates. So interesting day at camp. Not too much, you know, not a really heavy duty practice by any stretch, but certainly some heat and some interesting new wrinkles that kind of, I think, give you a little bit of an insight into Minter's desire to set a culture a certain way. And I really appreciate it. That's it for today. Use hashtag film study mailbag if you have questions you'd like me to answer, either in a 1-minute video. If you'd like to do a short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.